This is Dr. J with Change Surfer Radio. For the next half hour, keep your radio tuned to the left and your mind in the open position as we present a sexy high-tech vision of our radically democratic future.
I'm talking with Terry Bisson. We're at the ReaderCon 11 in 1999 here in Waltham, Massachusetts. And Terry's agreed to talk with us a little bit about his writing history as a speculative writer. He's written about six novels and many, many short stories. So how did you first get involved in being a writer?
I got involved, like most people, when I was a kid. When I was in high school and college, I wanted to be a writer. Wrote a novel when I was in college many years ago. We're talking about the very early 60s. The novel didn't sell, and I got caught up in the 60s. I kind of quit writing between 66 and really about 75, and was part of the hippie movement, the commune movement, the anti-war movement, and sort of got involved in a lot of this stuff. So I went through a long period. I didn't really start writing successfully or professionally until the late 70s when I was 40 years old.
Well, that's inspiring, since I'm approaching that myself.
Okay.
And haven't written a word yet. I first got interested in your work because of its intersection with political values. Your book, Fire on the Mountain, which talks about an alternative future for the Brown's Ferry Uprising.
And the Harper's Ferry.
Harper's Ferry Uprising, and John Brown led the Harper's Ferry Uprising. And what if John Brown and Harriet Tubman had been successful in that enterprise, and it might have led to a very different historical conclusion. And have you been interested in, can you tell me a little bit about your personal values that led to that kind of explicitly socialist speculation in that book?
Well, my background is pretty typical of somebody from my, I mean, it's a little unusual, but I'm somebody who came of age in the late 50s, early 60s. I'm from the Upper South. I was very much influenced by the Civil War movement and the anti-war movement. And so it's pretty much the same trajectory as a lot of other people.
Mm-hmm.
My interest in, studying history and economics, I became sort of inclined towards socialism and inclined towards issues of social justice, but really my own background in that is no different from anybody else's my age, which is not to say that everybody in my generation was progressive, but the 10 or 15%, which is a pretty large percentage that is progressive, all come out of pretty much the same things, which are the civil rights movement, the anti-war movement, and the sort of middle-class white American response to those movements, which was SDS, anti-war movement, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm. So when you took up writing, did you see it as a form of political practice, or was it incidental?
No, when I first took up writing in the early 1960s, I didn't see it. I was more interested in writing as a following in the footsteps of like Fitzgerald and Hemingway, and I wanted to be a serious high modernist author in that sense of the word. I saw it as political in the sense that I think that modernism is political in that way. It has a political agenda, but it's when I got back into writing in the late 70s, after I failed as a high modernist writer, I became a science fiction writer. And when I got back into it, I was involved in a number of political projects. I was an activist with an anti-Klan group. I was an activist with what they call the New Communist Movement in the 70s, where people were trying to build a communist party in the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
And so that definitely colored the work that I was doing that period of time.
Mm-hmm. Another one of your novels, Voyage to the Red Planet, has pretty explicitly anti-capitalist critique. Has that been working through a kind of dystopian perspective on contemporary trends, been working through your work?
Yeah, I would say there's a lot of... I would say that a lot of writers, in particular science fiction writers, in this period of time have a sort of an anti-capitalist critique. Voyage to the Red Planet is not, that's a political novel in the sense that it's a sort of satire on capitalism, but it's not a political novel in the
doesn't
sense
doesn't suggest
that,
alternatives.
Yeah, not really.
Yeah,
not
but really. That, but that's true. Most science fiction is that it is critical of trends, but it doesn't suggest any alternatives, like cyberpunk.
Well, yeah, but some science fiction does. If you read Kim Stanley Robinson, he wrote a utopian novel called Pacific Edge, which is a sort of a socialist, sort of a green utopia, and I think...
And Antarctica and the blue, green, red Mars series as
yeah,
well.
Yeah. And so I would, you know, my politics are... Well, I'm not quite... we'll have to edit back on this because I sort of got lost there.
Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the politics of science fiction. I mean, are you disgruntled, happy, you don't really care about the direction science fiction is going? It seems like a lot of science fiction has a kind of latent libertarian politics to it that...
Some of it does.
Some of it's very explicit, I think.
Some of it's quite right-wing. Some of it's libertarian. Very little science fiction is sort of, I would say, intelligently socialist. I think Robinson is, one of the best in that he's somebody who kind of thinks that way, kind of works through a socialist perspective. And actually, we're close friends, and we worked out a lot of these kind of ideas together to some extent. But most science fiction is, I would say, most progressive science fiction, like Gibson, is sort of anti-capitalist without being seriously, without offering a serious alternative. So it's, I would say it's not a, it no longer pretends or purports to offer a serious or a very well thought out critique of capitalism, most of it.
Have you had a chance to read Bruce Sterling's Viridian Manifesto?
Haven't read that. I know Bruce. I know his work, and yeah. I would say Bruce is sort of like Gibson. He has the right instincts, and he thinks about the right. I agree with him about a lot of stuff, although. Yeah. I think he tends to be a little cynical about the possibilities of socialism.
Right. He's pretty hyperbolic in that manifesto about the fact that the ecosystem's under such threat that we have to forget about any concerns about social justice for the time being and just focus on convincing elites to change things. And
I don't know this book, so...
Well, it's not a book. It's a manifesto that he's recently written called Viridian Manifesto. It's up on the web.
Interesting. I'll check it out. I'm not familiar with it.
Yeah. You recently got involved in the Mumia Abu Jamal project. Do you want to tell me a little bit about that?
That's not exactly true. What recently? What do you mean?
Oh, well, in the blurb in the conference materials, it says that you were... helping to write or edit a movie, Abu Jamal.
Oh, I worked on his first book, but this is about 5 or 6 years ago.
Okay.
I met Mumia through a friend of mine who was in prison with him. And we were friends for a while. I visited him and we corresponded and I helped put his first book together. Although, I've been somewhat active in at the early stages of the campaign around, you know, freeing Mumia and the new trial, although I haven't been active in the last couple of years and I haven't really talked to him in a couple of years. So I'm not terribly active at this point.
Mm-hmm. And can you tell me a little bit about the Peter Coyote book?
The Coyote book is a book called Sleeping Where I Fall. It's a memoir of the... from about 1965 to 75. It's a memoir of the hippie sort of the hippie movement as opposed to the political movement of that period of time. And I helped edit that book because Peter and I were our old friends, and we were also, our lives intersected a lot during the late 60s and middle 70s. And so, and we're still friends. And so when he was working on this book, he called on me to help him kind of edit it at some point. He's a good writer, but the book was kind of, it was longer than he wanted it to be. So I sort of helped him edit it down, that's all.
Do you think that the current historical situation that we're in with the collapse of communism and the creation of this new global corporate world order, or perhaps a transpolar world order with China and some other countries at the other end, do you think it creates new possibilities for utopian fiction, for speculative fiction to have an impact, or do you believe that art has that kind of an impact, or that people can affect the world through speculative fiction?
Well, I think ideas affect the world, and I think speculative fiction is a way of exploring ideas. I don't think it offers any new. I think the period we're in right now, I don't know. I don't think of it right now as a particularly. I think what you're asking is this a juncture in which fiction can be more influential than other times,
yeah,
or less? No, I don't think so. I think it's. I don't think it really works either way. I don't really know. I think you're in a period right now where American culture really defines the world culture in a way. Like American film, American science fiction is world science fiction. I mean, as an American, as a middle or lower rank American science fiction writer, I probably have readers in Australia, you know, whereas Australian writers are not going to have the same impact in America. So being in America, an American gives you a privileged position in the world in that sense. But it also, I think this is not a time when there's a lot of, I don't see a lot of science fiction that's very daring or very very speculative, really. And I think that there's a boom in science fiction. People always come up to me and they're saying, well, things must be good. You know, science fiction is hot now. You got all these, probably three or four out of the last 10 big hit movies have been science fiction movies. But they're all recycled science fiction ideas from from the 50s and the 60s. It's not, and the science fiction that, the serious stuff that people like Stan Robinson or Gibson or Ursula Le Guin or people like that are trying to do is actually less popular now than it was 5 or 6 years ago. So I don't think it's a particularly good time for speculative fiction, as you call it.
David Brin recently published a critique of the Phantom Menace and the whole Star Wars phenomenon. And a couple of the points he made in there were that he thought that that George Lucas, Lucas is the guy behind all that, that Lucas was pursuing a particularly reactionary political agenda with his whole thing, that he was valorizing, as a lot of space opera does, a feudalist social order, and that he thought that the Phantom Menace was creating sympathy for the Darth Vader character, who was a mass murderer, and he made a series of political critiques. Do you similarly share that idea that the dominant, especially film science fiction, tends to have a kind of reactionary impact on the world?
Certainly it's true of Star Wars. I've always hated the Star Wars things. Not only because, and it's true, they are a sort of they are sort of medievalism in space, but they also, to me, they killed real science fiction. There was a period in about must have been 69 or 70, the time of 2001, where it looked like they were actually going to do real science fiction and films.
Mm-hmm.
And that was it. That was the last one.
Yeah.
They never, after that, you had these, you know, these spaceships that, with wings that flew around and, you know, and nobody tried to, nobody ever tried to deal with what zero gravity would be like or mm-hmm. what, anything. You know, mm-hmm. it was all just cowboy movies in space. So I had my own, for many reasons, I think that that's reactionary stuff. And certainly the social values of it are not, they're not anything very forward-looking, I agree.
Mm-hmm. How do you think that trends in that in science and in our society will affect the political form of the future? Do you think that our contemporary vision of left-right, of progressive and reactionary is going to change in the future? For instance, I'm thinking of issues over biotechnology that seem to fracture both the left and the right, that there are people on the left and the right who embrace biotechnology and those who reject it in a kind of neo-Luddite position. Do you think that these older 19th century and 20th century ideas of left-right will pertain?
Well, yeah, I think they will. I think basically the left-right division is a pretty old one between a individualistic and a sort of a socialist kind of worldview. And I think there's always been what Marx called the interpenetration of opposites. So there's always been an aspect of the left which is sort of old-fashioned and hidebound, I've always felt like. And there's always been a way in which the right there's certain ideas the right is quicker to embrace. And as I'm not a practicing leftist anymore, but I was for about 10 years. Working organizationally with... Mm-hmm. with other people, and it was always frustrating to me how I think the left can be very old-fashioned and very muddled up and filled with cant, and
mm-hmm.
you know, but I think that's always been true, so mm-hmm. I don't think that's anything new, and I think that I don't think that'll change in the near future.
Mm-hmm. You want to tell me about your current project, The Deletion Artist?
It's not coming out. It's not written yet. I'm halfway through it. The Deletion Artist is a novel about the idea of the Deletion Artist is that there's too much art. There's too many books. There's too many songs. There's too many paintings, and it's. And at this, you know, it sort of takes the idea of the canon and what do you do with the canon and what is the canon in any particular field, and see, I'm kind of talking in circles here. The idea of the Deletion Artist is that a certain amount of works, whether it's movies or songs or a musician's body of work or paintings, has to be deleted every year so that there's room for new stuff to come in. So the Deletion Artist, the book is about a guy, it's his job to go around and pick up stuff that's been taken out of the, when they delete Hank Williams, somebody's got to go around and pick up all the old Hank Williams albums and destroy them so that there can be a new Hank Williams.
Mm-hmm.
When they delete Terry Bisson, somebody's got to... The idea of the book is that it takes place about 40 years in the future when all the Library of Congress and music and everything is basically on the Internet. So you download the stuff from Central... you download CDs, you download books, you download... any artist's work. And so if somebody gets deleted, all you got to do is just erase it, and it's gone. And then if there's stuff still out there in the world, like people still have actually old paperback books or something, well, somebody's got to go around and pick them up. There's mm-hmm. there's a bounty on them, and they get picked up. So that's sort of the idea of it.
Mm-hmm. So Fahrenheit 451 for digital age?
It's a slightly different idea, mm-hmm. but it's kind of taken Fahrenheit. Yeah, it's kind of that idea in a... Mm-hmm. in a different setting.
Mm-hmm. Well, I really appreciate your talking with us today.
Well, you're quite welcome. I feel like I kind of talked in circles. But
that's fine.
Maybe you can edit that down to something that'll work.
You've been listening to Change Surfer Radio. If you want to learn more about radical democratic transhumanism, or want to share your thoughts about the show with me, Dr. J, email me at jhughes@changesurfer.com. Also, check out past and future shows and myriad relevant links at the website, www.changesurfer.com. Check back next week at the same time for Change Surfer Radio.